Great evening, everybody. Thanks for joining us. This is Sex and Dipity. I'm Dr. Limor Blockman, and I have a wonderful guest in the studio.
Oh, you're being kind.
Oh. Please, my darling, introduce yourself.
My name's Dave Corrado, and I do stand-up comedy, and I'm just thankful that you invited me on your show.
It's such a pleasure. I'm so glad that you're here.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, and it's a pleasure to be anywhere. You know, that's what I do. I tell jokes and stuff like that. But, when I heard that you wanted to have me on the show, I'm very honored.
It's truly a pleasure. And I'm hopeful that we can see you very often.
I'd like to be seen.
And I want to, you know, I'm sure we can talk about many, many things, but I'm going to start and ask you, did you get to live with a partner? Was that something that you came across in the past or in the present?
I've been very, relationships have always been kind of a difficult thing for me. I mean, I was like, there was a girl who I think wanted to get married and settle down with me, but she was crazy.
That would be a problem.
Well, yeah, but that's technically who I attract, is like people who are insane. And the way I see it, there's only room for one crazy person.
That's
like
true.
In a relationship.
Right.
And, you know, so
when you have two, they collide.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
So it didn't happen.
No, this is my previous relationship. We went out for like 3 weeks, and I realized she was like trying to like move in with her stuff.
After 3 weeks.
Yeah, well, she
started bringing her stuff in.
Well, she kind of was trying to move things along kind of quickly.
Mm.
You know, on her first date, she spent the weekend, you know. And then it was like,
that's
a
lot, yeah.
It was like, you know, I think maybe I have to go to work tomorrow. Can I drop you off home someplace?
Or someplace.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know, I realized it wasn't good. So but we're still friends. That's the nice thing.
No, it isn't. It is very nice and not very common, I have to say. You probably know that people stay friends or even, I don't know how long you guys were dating, but.
Three weeks. Well, she was like talking about, my place is so small. I don't have any room to, you know, and it's like,
Yeah, it's usually a problem when you start seeing somebody and they already take over immediately.
But I really liked her. I'm not trying to interrupt you.
No, of course. I'm glad. No, keep talking. Yes, definitely.
The one girl who I was really serious about, like, we went out for 5 months, and I
that's longer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's my record now. And she was beautiful and smart, but she was crazy too.
Also, that's a lunatic.
But she was crazy in a different way. You know, okay. She was like kind of together, and you know, she kind of broke my heart. You know, after.
Why?
Well, she told me she didn't love me anymore. Like after,
aww.
You know, it's like I was madly in love with her, you know, and then it's like, and then, you know, and then she broke it up with me and then, but you know, you move on, you gotta, but you know, I recently called her. I called her for the first time in 5 years.
And you just, did? How did that go?
I called her out of the blue and it was nice hearing her voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked, we caught up a little bit and, you know, she's doing good. You know, I found out she's like living in New York now and
it's nice. Okay. So she moved on with her life.
Yeah.
Okay. The reason I brought it up was because, I read a study that, sharing the same, you know, sharing house chores, you would say, you know, people that live together, not necessarily married, but people that live together. And this is why I asked you, when the males in the relationship carry some of the burden, meaning, you know, I don't know, cleaning, doing, you know, dishes or stuff like that, they tend to have less sex. So I wanted to run it by you and ask you, how do you feel about it? Because
Well, living alone, like I am now, yeah. I mean, if nobody cleans the bathroom or takes out the garbage, then it doesn't get done. Yeah, I mean, eventually, you know, my house becomes filthy and disgusting, and then, so you know, I'm kind of like, you know, doing everything. You know, it's like I go to work and then I come home and I pass out sometimes, and then, But you know, on the weekends, I have to, you know, I got to make sure that my place is somewhat livable. I, you know, I don't want to.
Yeah, no, that's very admirable. But the question is, do you think, I mean, like if you were living with a woman, for instance, if this woman, if you had allowed her to move in, that woman that you saw for 3 weeks, I don't know if you would have been killed in your sleep. That could have been also a result. But let's say you were kept alive.
Right.
And you were living together. Mm-hmm. Do you think that the fact that you would keep on, because it's your place and everything, you would keep on doing the work, I don't know, like taking out the garbage or cleaning, would that give you less sex? Do you think she would have been, because the study, the assumption is, because we still believe in gender roles, mm-hmm. I don't know, society in general. I don't know, and I'm talking Western, I'm talking where we live. Yeah. I'm not going into other societies.
Yeah.
But, and they found it questionable with younger couples where, you know, it's not as common, gender roles are not as clear. But let's just say because women are expected to do the more kind of trivial housework.
Well, I think, you know, I kind of grew up kind of a lefty, you know. It's like I'm kind of a liberal, and, you know, and I don't think if I was, like, in a serious relationship, I would not be the king of the castle. I mean,
I'm sitting. Woman, bring me my food, my dinner.
No. I'm not like that. I'm more, you know, you can probably tell I'm a little shy. I'm not a bossy kind of guy.
No.
So I would not, you know, but it would depend on, like, if she was working too, if my partner, wife, girlfriend, whatever was working and we were living together, I would hope that we would share, you know.
The burden.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And but I tend to agree, yeah.
But in terms of sex, I mean, I would just hope that, you know, the sex would just be good.
<You know? laughs> we always hope for it, yes.
It's like, I don't mind taking out the garbage, you know, if we're having good sex, you know. It's
I
like,
know. As soon as we finish, I can take out the garbage.
Exactly.
I agree. But the question is, even subconsciously, and talking to you, maybe because you're more of a liberal and less, you know, you don't see things as I explained that the study showed. But let's just say that people do believe, even subconsciously, in gender roles. And they say, oh, if a man, because what the researchers claimed was that if a man is taking the burden and doing some of the stuff that are supposed to be identified with the female gender role, then the woman subconsciously would feel less appeal, she would see him as less appealing, as less manly, as less, you know, kind of domineering, whatever. Not necessarily that women would want that, but, you know, less manly or less masculine.
Well, you know, I think that marriage, let's say, marriage is a partnership, you know, and it's kind of a thing that's been around for, I don't know, centuries, millennium, I don't know.
Yes, very, very long time, unfortunately.
Yeah. And... you know, it's like kind of a corporation. It's like two people, they say, look, we're going to go on the same path together. We're going to like be co-partners. Like,
right.
Like a partnership. And,
yeah.
And so you assume certain responsibilities or certain, you take on certain duties. In the old days, it was like simple. The guy went out, he killed the animals and he brought the animal home. And then,
right, yeah. We want the meat and, you know, women want the meat to be brought. and then the man is going and going
then
to
you,
get it.
You put it on the fire and cook it somehow.
Right, somehow.
Or whatever.
You know, that's probably, and just a side comment, I think that's probably why human race started, you know, craving meat so much, because, you know, nuts and berries don't run away. Hmm. So males had to find a way for them to be more, you know, stronger, and, you know, that the women would need them to bring something, because if they remained vegetarian...
Yeah, the women wouldn't need men.
Women would not need them.
Because men are stinky, and they scratch, and they just have all these bad habits. But...
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, I see what you're saying. Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, guys who are able to bring home the bacon, as they say,
yes.
You know, that's like, you know, their gender role. And then...
Right.
And then... You know, in the old days, at
John
least,
Wayne.
Yeah, and then the lady would fry up the bacon after he brought home the bacon.
Right, and bring him a beer.
Exactly.
Yes.
But but I don't know. No, I don't know. I'm kind of, I would probably, if I was married, I think I would probably be kind of a henpecked husband. It's the way I am, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but so you don't think it would have affected, like, a woman that would be living with you and you would take responsibility, you don't think she'll find it like, oh, because he's not acting that manly? Because initially you would be that kind of man. So it really depends on who you are to begin with. That's what you're saying, probably.
Well, yeah, I think one of the reasons that, you know, I've stayed single is because, well, there's probably a few reasons, but... I think that I've been, you know, reluctant to take on the responsibility of marriage because I don't want to have to be this domineering kind of person, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to have to be somebody's boss.
Yeah. No, I agree. I fully understand that. I tend to agree. Obviously, I'm not, you know, the typical John Wayne's wife. I don't think so. So...
I mean, if I can ask you a question,
yeah,
have you been married?
I have been married, yes. I'm no longer married,
okay.
Which probably says a lot. Right. But yeah, I have been married. It wasn't that kind of marriage. My husband was also very not really believing in gender roles. If anything, I wish he did believe
really?
In some gender roles.
You wanted somebody more like...
Well, I tend to think that... Look, in this society, obviously, I don't represent the very timid, you know, kind of shy woman, coy woman. I don't, because I wouldn't have been with the level of education that I have, mm-hmm. and I wouldn't have been, you know, kind of, I think that being a feminist is not really burning bras. Heck, I don't wear them. But in general, I do think that it's more about being a strong, you know, opinionated woman.
Mm-hmm.
To begin with. And that's really, it doesn't really fall into that equation of the little wife.
No, I would not, you know what? I would never, ever get in a relationship with somebody who was like timid. Because I would need a woman who had opinions and who I could talk to.
Right, definitely. Yeah. And so to you, it wouldn't have mattered. I mean, if the sex is there, it would have been good, as good if you share the house, you know, chores or whatever. So,
yeah. I do my own dishes, I do my own laundry, you know.
I think you're a great catch. I mean, where are the women?
I don't know. I think it's because I'm short. I think it's because, I swear to God, I don't believe in God, but, you know, I think it's because I'm a kind of a small fella. I don't know why. I think people probably think I'm crazy or something. I don't know.
No, I don't think so. But the women that you attract are.
Yeah, but I'm trying to cut back on that.
You're trying to find a regular, normal one.
You know, it's like I was talking to you before the show, and I told you I recently attended my 30th high school reunion.
Yeah,
which
that's
not to give away my age, but you know, it's
so
like,
many, it doesn't matter.
But at this point, it's like I don't even know, like, if I want to procreate. You know, it's like I don't know. It's a you know, it's like kids. I like kids, but I don't. I like other people's kids.
Yeah, I like when you can return them at the end of the evening.
It's like other people's pets. I love cats and dogs, but I don't want a cat.
If they're not yours.
No, a cat. They scratch up the furniture and the
I know. It could be really, yeah, it's a lot of, it's tasking. It could be tasking.
I mean, I really do love dogs and cats and animals
too.
And stuff, mm-hmm. but other people's animals. Because once they get sick and it costs you like $20,000, it's not so much fun.
And he does. Yeah, it's true. I mean, having a pet is a lot of responsibility. And sometimes it's hard to have sex when you have a pet, you know?
Hmm. Do you have pets?
I don't have pets, but, you know, I've come across situations where a pet is, you know, getting in the way.
Oh, really? Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, you can deal with it, but
it's
yeah,
kind of like
it's possible.
It's kind of
yeah,
like
it's,
kids,
it's
too.
Very, yeah, it's very similar because you need to give attention. I mean, I believe that if you do take, not to really kind of equate kids and pets. No, I'm not doing it, everybody. So, but... But if you have someone that you care for and they're like, you know, coming in between, laying on the bed with you or something, you're not going to be rude and mean about it and toss them away or something.
Yeah.
So, and I'm, you know, of course, focusing on sex.
Of course.
So I'm
the
going
topic
back.
Of the show.
Yeah, of course. So there's something else that another study. So we kind of, yeah, we concluded that it doesn't really matter. And so.
Not for me.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If we share responsibilities, I say the more the merrier, and the more sex you have, the better. How do you feel? So obviously you haven't been married, but I don't know, from people that you are friends with or something. Mm-hmm. Do you find that married couples, after they have kids, stop having sex?
Well, you know, I talk to my friends who are married.
And have kids.
Well, okay, let me see. At my reunion, like everybody I spoke to, I said, you know, how are your kids? You have kids? You know, you're married? You have kids?
Yeah, it was like the same question you ask people.
And they're like, yeah, I got Justin is 7 and Allison is 12. And, you know, and they give me the whole thing. And it was like kind of interesting. It was exotic.
It was exotic.
I mean, for me, because I'm so busy just like going to work and like going out to, you know, clubs and telling jokes and stuff. I don't have time. I mean, I don't know, you know, so it's kind of like fascinating, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I know from talking to people that it's just a lot of work to have kids.
Oh, it is a lot of work, yeah.
I
don't have kids, no. Uh-huh. But I did raise a child with my ex-husband.
Okay.
So I know what it takes. But I'm talking about specifically because I find, and I'm going to relate to a study that I read, among others, this is just an example, but it's kind of common knowledge that people after they have kids, and especially soon after, they kind of fail to go back to having sex. And the question is, you know, is that really something that the unspoken truth, or, you know, like, do people really stop having sex after having kids? Is that like a killer of your sex life, or...
Well, I heard a story about Elvis Presley, who's one of my heroes.
Yes,
And
everybody's hero.
And, you know, and he met his wife when she was underage.
Right, yeah,
and
she was a child.
She claims that they did not consummate their marriage until she turned 18.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I buy that story. But it's like, apparently after she had the child, he never really looked at her the same way.
Yeah.
And... So I don't know. I can't speak from my own experience.
Well, I think for Elvis specifically, and I think if we even, you know, I don't want to like analyze his entire existence, but I think that he had mother issues.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was a lot of mother going on there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so it was kind of an Oedipus, you know, kind of syndrome.
I think so.
So, yeah. So that was different. And it's kind of the Madonna horror dichotomy, whether either you are... That, you know,
perfect.
Demanding femme fatale or you're a virginal mother. So you cannot be both. So if you have a child, especially his child, and I'm talking about him specifically, you can't be that alluring, sexy woman. Because I can't look at you this way.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, I of course, never having been married, never having children... I've heard stories that, like, that guys sometimes they don't view their woman's private parts the same way after a baby comes out of it.
It's very true. And I don't want to be crucified for saying this, but this is a strictly professional opinion because anybody can do whatever anybody wants. But I do believe that going into the delivery room and standing in front is a bad decision. I mean, you can be supportive of your woman and stand at her shoulder.
And
breathe and, push and yell and do whatever. But don't, you know, it's not necessary to stand in front of the vagina as the baby comes out. No, but seriously, because it really creates a problem. Because, and I'm going to go into that study and say that mainly, you know, doctors tell you that you can have sex after 6 weeks, after giving birth, it's possible, blah, blah, blah. Most couples showed that they don't. Mm-hmm. And to the extent of, I don't know, like 94% of people only had full sex after 6 months.
Really?
So that's a very, very long time. I mean, to not being abstinent completely, but, you know, kind of avoiding it, maybe having like partial sex or whatever that means, you know, like not full on, you know, vaginal sex or whatever.
Other things
you can practice. But also, you know, oral sex when it comes to it could be a problem because of delivery.
Really?
There's something called embolism. I'm not going to go into the really kind of like medical terms, but you know a lot about it as well.
I've done some research.
Yeah. it could be also a problem. So people find themselves after their wives are giving birth, kind of avoiding having sex, and that goes both for the women and for the men. I mean, and I have to say that daddies. Young fathers also kind of, and that specific study kind of testified to it as well, that men had the tendency also to avoid having sex because, you know, being kept awake at night and kind of worried and uncomfortable. Some of them even said that breastfeeding or vaginal bleeding gave them some discomfort. I don't know about breastfeeding. It's like a fetish almost. There is... you know, a sector that loves breastfeeding. Yeah, it's like it's in porn even common. But, you know, and most women are lactating at one point or another, especially, of course, after giving birth, but not necessarily even at that time. So not necessarily that, but in general, both mothers, new mothers and new fathers found it kind of hard to go back into regular sex. So... first of all, did you when you speak to people that have kids, did they mention something like that, or is that like something unspoken?
I had a conversation with I was talking to all these old friends of mine from I went to high school with, and and my one friend, I won't say his name, but
his privacy.
I'm not going to name names. He was saying, I haven't had sex with my wife in like 3 months,
And he said it very, very sadly.
Well.
Or did he?
He just kind of seemed kind of like matter of fact, It's just like.
You see, that's really unfortunate.
Well, I would think so, because I mean, I know I've met his wife and she's a lovely person, and I don't know. I don't see why they wouldn't,
after having a baby.
Well, they have two kids.
Okay, young?
Well, at this point, I think they're like maybe like 7 and 10 or something like
and
that.
And they don't have like...
I don't know. Maybe when... You see, that's the thing about marriage. I mean, not having been married, but, monotony. monogamy and monotony. They kind of almost rhyme.
Yeah, unfortunately.
I'll do a joke that a friend of mine wrote.
Please.
Howard Berger, he's a good buddy of mine. He said that he gets the married man's version of Playboy. Every month, it's the same centerfold.
Oh, my God.
Howard Berger, shout out to you, Howard.
That's very cute, but it's true. I mean, you know what is the common denominator in, like, porn sites?
Mm-hmm.
It's variety and novelty.
Yeah.
Because that's the main, these are the two engines that fire up the male desire. For women, it is, we're also kind of in need of, you know, variety and novelty. It's true. And women are less. But for men, it's really, and there are theories that actually really analyze it. There's a theory called the Coolidge effect that speaks about the fact that the exact same thing that I mentioned, the need for novelty and variety. And it says in a nutshell that men's desire kind of flags after between a few months to a few years with the same partner, but immediately rocks as soon as he's exposed to a new female, regardless of her attraction level. And that means that she could be much less attractive than his current partner.
Right.
But just because it's new.
Well, yeah, you hear stories about guys like, all right, there's beautiful actress.
Yes.
Halle Berry.
Yes.
Halle
Berry. Very beautiful.
I say Halle Berry. Yes. Some people say Halle Berry. Yes. I say Halle Berry.
Okay.
But she's a, you know, a very talented actress and gorgeous.
My age, too.
Yeah, 47. We're like the same age.
She doesn't look it at all. You don't look it either.
Well, thank you.
But she doesn't look it. She's very beautiful.
But she had some, like, you know, it's like she was married to some guy who...
The French guy.
According to the tabloids and all this kind of thing, was allegedly cheating on her and
yes.
stuff. And it's like you figure how, if you've got like Halle Berry...
How is that possible that you're going to cheat on her? Well, here it is. I just mentioned it. Yeah, and it's true. I mean, regardless, no. But let me relate to two things. I mean, it could be that, the fact that novelty is something very necessary for male desire, first of all, and that has been proven over and over again. And then secondly, and I don't know because there are studies that kind of support it and others that negate it, and I can't, you know, really be the judge of which is true, but there are men and... Even some studies claim to have a gene, you know, that is related to it. But some men have the tendency to be more monogamous or more, you know, supportive of a long-term one relationship. Mm-hmm. And others who are always flirtatious, always interested in getting, you know, like they kind of live off that new need of exciting new females or just acquiring the attention of a new female.
Well, it's kind of like the whole... caveman, hunter, gatherer kind of thing. It's like you're on the hunt. You know, it's like exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So if you have the same woman waiting for you in the cave, you kind of, you again. I don't care that the neighbor is less, you know, Wilma is less attractive. But like, I'd rather have her excited than yell my name, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's also a cultural thing. I mean,
it is definitely.
The stereotype is that, like, I know that I don't know what your religious beliefs are.
Well, I don't follow. I'm Jewish, but I don't follow any. I'm secular.
Okay. You know, the stereotype is that Jewish men make the best husbands.
Yeah, and why?
Yeah, probably wives. Yeah.
Asking why. Do you know?
I don't know. Well, I guess because they're used to persecution.
That is a horrible.
I don't know. I'm sorry, but you know, I had to go for the joke there.
But it's true. I mean, I don't know if they make the best husbands. Again, I was married to a Jewish man. And I believe, it really depends what you're looking for and what is a good husband.
Mm-hmm.
Because if a good husband, and I will say this, that a lot of non-Jewish women, and that I know from acquaintances of mine or friends that are not Jewish, a lot of their mothers or, you know, family is always kind of encouraging them to date Jewish men because of two things. They claim that they're responsible, that they're good providers.
Yeah.
And they're also not violent.
I've heard that, yes.
Yes.
And, that is kind of the stereotype. You know, it's like Italians or Irish, they have the stereotype of being, like, passionate. But
yes.
They can maybe fly
Latin
off the...
The lover.
Yeah. They can maybe, like, fly off the handle once in a while, you know? So... So maybe they, you know, in a way, maybe that's more sexy in a way.
Yeah, it's, well, it could be more exciting to begin with. Yeah, than the most, you know, the more, you know, kind of calm,
like,
you know.
Serious, like, yeah, responsible. I mean, you know,
Maybe the question is, if do you want to go on a roller coaster ride or do you want to, you know,
have a peaceful.
Yeah, flight. Yeah. That is the question. And I believe that most women cannot answer that question.
Well, I think, well, another factor is like age. Like when men are younger,
yeah.
They tend to be a little more, you know, promiscuous. And then.
You think that when they're younger, is it significant of age or.
Well, they have a little more vitality, so to speak.
Right.
You know?
They can get it up
easy. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like. I'm not the same man I was when I was 16. I kind of peaked at 16. And
yeah, but it's true. It's not only you. You know, male sexuality peaks between 15 and 30.
Oh.
And female sexuality peaks between 35 and 55.
Mm-hmm.
So the optimal would be a teenager.
Marrying a 35-year-old.
Hello, yeah. You know, well, I get approached by 10-year-olds, so.
Well, it's this. Well, I don't know if you know this. You probably do because you're an expert. But if you know that when guys go onto porn sites, the most common search term, would you guess it would be teen or MILF?
I think both, but mostly teen. No. MILF.
MILF.
Really?
Yes. I think it's like ingrained from the time you're a teenager that you want to, you know, you want to
engage
taught.
In
you want to be you yeah
yeah you want to be swept away by a responsible adult.
Cougars. the other that's the other term they use.
Yeah, cougars. It's true. Well, I think that I think it's very personal because there are, and this is divided into two parts in the male society, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
There are men, and as you said, and I believe it's true. I'm sure we can even find studies about that, at what is that category that is so appealing to men, MILF or cougars. So there are men that are enticed by that older woman that mm-hmm. can really lead the way and kind of, you know, be that adventurous woman. And then, you know, youth is a big commodity. So a lot of men are attracted to even, you know, I don't know, the appeal of youth. Not necessarily mm-hmm. even a teenager that is underage, but someone that looks it.
Right.
Okay, so this is why there's this category of barely legal, whatever they call it.
Right.
And then they dress up a 30-year-old in, like, pigtails, which is kind of pathetic. But, yeah, I mean, in a certain light, if she has small breasts, she can look like a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I read a story, I don't know if it's true, but like Errol Flynn.
Yeah.
He was into younger women.
Yes.
And
it is true.
And he, I think he got arrested for
it or
something.
Yes, he did.
And this one story I heard about was he met this guy who, you know, kind of knew women who were in the sex business.
Yeah.
And he said, what kind of women are you looking for? He goes, well, I don't care if they're 18 as long as they look 14.
Yeah.
You know.
It's true. I mean, it is true. It's a big attraction. And this is why I told you that I wasn't sure about the teen section in a porn site. Because I think it's probably equally visited, at least. You know, and I have to give you an example even, and this is an interesting example because I told you when we had our pre-show discussion, I told you that initially I wanted to be a literature teacher when I was in high school because I fell in love with French erotica. And French erotica, I must say, is by far more extreme than American erotica or other languages because, and I'm talking about the original, non-translated. So it could be Anna Isnin or Pierre Louis or others that wrote really extreme. Well, Anna Isnin is not really that, well, somewhat extreme, but a lot of incest and a lot of different forms of, not necessarily appealing, but it's extreme. It's explicit.
Really?
To the extent, yes, very, very explicit.
Hmm.
Now, one example of foreign erotica that while it was kind of, it emigrated into this country, was Altered, for for the sake of that our society here that we live in. Mm. And still, I term, you know, Western societies is all over, of course. I mean, that's American and French and, you know, Spanish or whatever. But still, when it comes to, for instance, Vladimir Nabokov's Lolita.
I read that.
Yes, and I'm sure you have. And, you know, being educated and everything and interested and, you know, smart. I'm sure you read it. And did you like it? Did you read?
Well, the guy is a great writer.
Amazing.
I mean, brilliant.
I think he is amazing. I think that a bunch of his books are
his
good.
Use of language, I mean, all right, forget about the whole, you know, prurient aspect of the story. The way he writes is just, you know.
Shockingly beautiful. And
Yeah.
Yeah, and alluring and kind of, you know.
But it's also kind of like he's tapping into the mind of a guy who's, you know, kind of a, you know, he's sick.
Yeah.
He's a sick person.
Well, I have to say, and this is where I'm getting at, that initially in Nabokov's initial original novel, mm-hmm. Dolores Hayes, who is the main character, is 12.
Lolita
is 12.
Yeah.
Is she 10 or 12?
I think 12.
In the adaptation that Stanley Kubrick did, right. Or later on, what was his name? Adrian Lane.
The latest
one with Jeremy Irons. She's 14.
Exactly.
In both versions, because they wanted to make it. Let's just say it out clear. They wanted to make her plowing less travesting, you know, to the naked eye.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, she's 14, so she's having sex with her stepfather.
Well,
we're still uncomfortable, but not as uncomfortable as if when she was 12.
Well, you know, Romeo and Juliet.
Yes.
In the play,
yeah.
As written by Bill Shakespeare, a personal friend of mine.
Bill.
I think they were like teenagers. I mean,
they were
like 14 and 15 or 16, you know.
But just because both of them were teenagers.
Yeah, but
then it's less.
Yeah. It's predatory. I mean, when somebody uses their, you know, power
or hierarchy, the fact that he's her father, doesn't matter that he's not biologically her father, but he's the adult figure.
Yeah.
Right? And then in the book, and I tend to, you know, I've analyzed it and read a lot about that specific novel because it's analyzed a lot,
uh-huh.
You know, in my field. And a lot of people claim that the real predator in the book is Lolita.
Huh.
Because, and even in the adaptation of the movies and everything, you see that she wasn't a virgin when they first have sex.
Oh.
And that she was kind of manipulative and very, you know, the whole idea of nymphet, you know, the idea of
somebody who's sexual, who's
right. It was,
youthful.
It, yeah. You know, promiscuous kind of girl.
Flirtatious.
Yes.
Like
and it came, and he was the first use, he made it, you know, popular, that use of that term, nymphet, was from him.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and of course it comes from Greek, you know, mythology of the nymphas. There were sitting, you know, these girls, they were topless and sitting at the, you know, at the side of a river and at their own volition. You know, kind of attracting both males and females and, you know, we're completely out of male dominance. And well, so it comes from there. Yeah.
It's funny. I had a conversation with a friend of mine on the phone yesterday. And
mm-hmm. He's
a very funny guy. And one of the funniest guys I know. And we were talking about Roman Polanski.
Mm-hmm.
Roman Polanski.
I think he was also arrested.
He fled the country.
He can't
come back here.
Yes.
Because what he did was really, you know, like the worst kind of crime against.
Yeah.
And then, so I'm having this conversation with, you know, he was with, I don't know, for your listeners who aren't familiar, he supposedly drugged, no, I don't, I personally believe he drugged this young girl.
Yes.
And he had sex with her.
He filmed it.
And not even, like, and also took her, I don't know how to say it, on the, you know.
Please say it.
We're explicit here. Okay. they call it buggery or sodomy or what. He sodomized, you know, he stuck his, you know, a thing in a place where that's.
He sodomized her.
Exactly.
Yes.
And she was drugged and
he penetrated her anally with an object.
Ooh.
Right?
I guess so. But yes. My friend goes, but you know what? It came up that she was not a virgin when it happened. So yes. I'm like, oh, well, that's fine.
Well,
then.
That's fine then.
I mean, yeah, that. No,
but that's a reaction. It's true. I mean, people react this way.
Well, I think that if you're a man,
yeah,
you have to protect, you know, children are, you can't.
And no, it's true.
You know, I mean, if I have a girlfriend or something, I'm not going to, if somebody, you know, fucks with them, I'll kill them.
Yeah, because you're protective.
Yeah.
You're a man. Of course. I mean, yeah, it makes sense.
Well, maybe not kill them, but maybe beat them.
Yeah, attack them severely.
Yes. You know, I beat the shit
out of them.
Exact. Perfect. You just took the words right out of my mouth.
I know. But seriously, yeah, no, I agree. The thing is with kids, us as society are very sensitive to them. And I think that, and again, I don't equate pets and kids together, but I feel that, especially here in California, people tend to look at their pets as their kids and they kind of, you know, kind of baby them and the whole thing. And I think that the main characteristic is that it's such a sacred thing, both kids and pets and of the these categories, that we have the tendency to forget. Well, I'm not going to talk about pets as a sexual being. Kind of weird. But there is something that is related to is adolescent sexuality. Mm. And it doesn't mean that kids should have sex. I'm not supportive of that at all. Mm. I mean, in no shape or form, even though in tribal societies it's very common. Mm-hmm. But we're talking in Western society, and these are the restrictions and the law and everything, and I accept it. And I think it's better this way because sexuality needs to come with a responsibility and awareness and a lot of other factors that cannot be entailed, you know, when it comes to children. But I feel, and you, that mentioning that you said, if she wasn't a virgin at the time, is very applicable to many views, especially male views, when it comes to female sexuality, no matter what age it is. And for instance, I've read a few studies when victims of date rape were considered responsible for it if they were promiscuous. Meaning that if I go on a date and I'm being kind of flirtatious and I touch the guy or I kiss him, I should be raped and that's fine.
No,
right? But this is kind of the view of things. And this is why, for instance, Vladimir Nabokov's novel, Lolita, was seen as something that they needed to change it to 14, but she was still kind of prosecuted as the predator in certain level or, you know, in certain societies. She still is seen as, you know, as the victim, as not necessarily the victim.
As
the predator.
Some would say. I think, you know, it comes down to being responsible. You know?
Yeah. No, I agree.
You gotta look. I mean, we have laws. You know.
Yeah.
18 years old. That's
right.
The age. You know.
That's the age of consent in this country.
And I don't know. And in different countries, maybe it's a different age.
Yes, it is different ages in different countries, but not to the extent of. I think the lowest is 16, as far as I'm aware of.
Okay. Yeah, but. Yeah, so I don't know. For me personally, the idea of taking somebody's innocence or whatever does not appeal to me. So, to some guys, that's like their fantasy.
Right, to pop the cherry. Yeah, no, but seriously, I mean, it is kind of like a prize.
Yeah, but almost. I would not want that responsibility. I wouldn't want that on my conscience.
Right.
You know,
and it's not necessarily a pleasurable thing either. I mean, to have sex with a virgin, but to some, in some societies or to some men, it would be a very appealing kind of prize-worthy, activity.
The whole thought of that, of being with somebody who doesn't
know what she's doing.
Exactly. It's like that has no appeal to me at all.
You would go with the MILFs.
Exactly.
So, yeah, let me bring something else up that I came across and I found was very funny. Do you have breakfast? Do you like breakfast? Do you eat breakfast?
Diet Pepsi.
Is that one of them? Really? That's what you have for breakfast?
You know, yeah.
You know, it's the most important meal of the day.
I should, You know, you're right. But it's like I've got a day job.
I'm not proud of it.
I mean, I have to get to work at 7 a.m. So I don't have a lot of time. But you're right. I should eat breakfast.
Yes.
You're absolutely right.
I know. And the reason I'm bringing it up.
If you were my wife, you would tell me to eat breakfast.
I would feed you breakfast every morning.
That's why I need a wine.
I know. And not crazy. So insane.
No, you got your mind together. I like it.
So the reason I'm bringing it up is because bats, are known to have cunnilingus for breakfast.
Wait, who does this?
Bats. Yeah.
B-E-T. What is a bat?
A bat, you know.
Oh, bats. I'm sorry. You have a slight accent.
I do.
But these, the winged...
The wingy creature. The wingy like mammal.
Exactly. They turn into vampires and stuff.
Yes. Well...
Or some...
If you like the fantasy.
So now, what about these bats?
So they have cunnilingus for breakfast.
Is that right?
Yes. They find the female vaginas very attractive, and they were viewed as, you know, that's their main thing. They like to have cunnilingus in the morning.
I would too.
They do. I know. But it's like, that's their breakfast. And they have like, there's a method to their madness. It's really like interesting. What they do is that, first of all, they kind of detect, you know, the right female that they want to kind of engage in cunnilingus with. And I have to say, you know, it goes both ways. You know, the females fillet the males, but it's more common with the males to approach a female.
Interesting.
And and what they do is kind of they detect the female, and then they start touching their penis to get it like kind of erect before they approach. No, but even sure, it's necessary. I agree. You know, they are mammals, so you know, they do what we do.
We're all on the same evolution scale, I suppose.
Yeah, we just don't fly around.
They are mammals.
Yeah, they are mammals. So what they do is they kind of get themselves erect, and then they approach the female, and as soon as she stops moving, you know, that's their signal to make their move. And then they start licking their vagina.
I'm sorry.
No, but I have to say it. That was like, I found that study fascinating. So they come over and they lick their vaginas for like 50 seconds.
50 seconds?
Yes, it's timed. So like 50 seconds. Okay. And then they go in for like, they penetrate for like 10 to 20 seconds only. And then they come out and they approach again. They continue on their cunnilingus for like approximately 3 minutes.
Mm. Wow.
So, that's the behavior. That's what they've been viewed to do. What do you... how do you feel?
Well, you know, if I can tell you a personal story.
Yeah, please.
There was a girl, when I was much younger, I mean, this is a girl who I had a big crush on.
Yeah.
And we ended up finally having a date.
Yeah.
And it's like, when I was young, I always thought the cunnilingus would be like a job, like just something that was mandatory, obligatory. That you had to,
obligatory.
But when I was...
It sounds so terrible, though.
But when I started doing it, and like she was like getting into it, it's like, wow, it's like I have this...
Wow, I have this talent.
Yeah. It's like the first time I got a laugh. Like I remember like when I was like maybe 5 or 6 years old and I told a joke and I got a laugh and it's like, wow, I can do this.
Yeah.
But it's totally, you know, it fed my ego. It's like,
oh, of course.
I loved it. I mean,
you
it was
liked
like
doing it and you liked her reaction.
Yes. Both. I think that was what made
the gratification.
The fact that I was like exciting her because she was a girl who I was crazy about.
The fact that she was, I don't know, climaxing over it or getting excited.
She was getting excited.
Right.
And it's like, wow, you know, I didn't think I would like this, but I love it. You know?
Yeah. So I think, no, but it's, first of all, it's good to know. No, because it is a very important trait. But in general, women, all women like cunnilingus. All women like it because it's kind of, there's two sides to it. First of all, most women are more able to climax via cunnilingus because the main pressure is around the clit. And most women are able to climax over clitoral stimulation more than vaginal. Mm-hmm. And I think the bats know best.
They know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing. The thing is, I found it very interesting because, let me go back. So first of all, women climax easily via cunnilingus. So that's number one. And number two, I think that a man that knows how to do it and kind of dedicates himself to it. And I think even Sex and the City had like an episode where Charlotte is meeting someone who is Mr. Tongue or something. Yeah, and he's like, oh, I once fainted or something. Someone tells her, you know, he pleasured me and I fainted or something. And yeah, and he's like all around. He doesn't speak. He just, you know, he just performs cunnilingus. But the thing is, I think women see it as like a sign of dedication.
Huh.
Like that a man
cares.
Cares and wants to pleasure you and wants to kind of get you off via that, that it doesn't necessarily, you know, triggers him. I mean, it does excite him, as you said, but it doesn't have to do with his penis specifically or directly, right?
Yeah.
So that on that note, you feel like, oh, you've been privileged with a man that cares about your climax.
As a man, I mean, you kind of do like to have some reciprocation.
Because, of course.
Because I...
For a woman to perform that as well.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, well, what happened, I dated a girl once.
Yes.
We went out for 3 dates. The first date, we made out.
Okay.
And I got her top off and, you know, and there was some...
You went to stage two.
Yeah. Second base. And then the second date, we went back to, you know, I bought her dinner and then we took her back. I took her.
You wined and dined her.
Exactly. And we went back to her place and we got nude and I went down on this girl for, I don't know, seemed like. I
forever.
Mean, but she told me she had like 15 or orgasms or something. I'm not trying to brag.
No, but yeah, you should brag if she did.
The thing that was so cool though was she was a kind of Latina, fiery kind of Latina, and she would tell me exactly, no, to the left, no.
She would direct you.
Yeah, back and forth, back, up, yep, you
director
know.
Director is king.
Yeah. And I was like, well, she's, you know, she's got to reciprocate, right? But no.
So when she came, she climaxed?
She told me she came like 15 times.
Okay, now that's done.
Okay,
what's happening after?
Well, it's like, do you want to help a guy out here?
Did you guys have sex?
No. She said, well, you haven't been tested. I said, I'm clean. I don't,
She allowed you to give her.
Yeah, exactly. I exposed myself to all kinds of danger. You know, it's like.
It's true.
I mean, I would have put on a, you know, protection or whatever. So we had a third date and I took her out to dinner again. We went back to her place. I said, this time she's got to.
You got to give a man some pleasure.
Nothing.
And you asked?
I went down on her again, the same story.
But you didn't ask.
Well, no, I said, can you help me out here? And no.
And she said no.
No.
Oh, that's very selfish.
And I was thinking to myself, you know.
No, you have to reciprocate.
I was thinking to myself, you know, well, all right. You know, it's like, it's better than just being home by myself.
At least I'm going to give some pleasure to someone else.
Yeah, I'm around.
I'm going to be a, you know, yeah.
I'm around a naked person. She was attractive and stuff. And
so I get to go, you know. Yeah, did you have to jerk off in the house? No, because I'm serious. It's like a man is like being left with an erection.
Well, yeah, the first time I really made out with this, it was the same girl who I went down on years ago.
But, some other girl.
Yeah. But. Yeah, you probably know the medical term for this, but it's like we were mashing and you know, and I got blue balls. I don't know what the medical term
is. Yeah.
But, you know, I got home and it's like, oh, it almost makes you feel nauseous.
It does.
Because it's like,
of course.
And it's painful.
Yeah, it is. So did you relieve yourself?
Of course.
And the thing is, I don't understand. Like, once you're done orally pleasuring someone, I have to say with the bats, I mean, the females did give the man some oral pleasure. I mean, it didn't, and they were even questioning why did they, because it was interesting, you know, and same applies for some humans, because we are mammals, but what they did is they started with cunnilingus, then they penetrated, then they went back to cunnilingus. So the researchers asked, why did they go back, or why did they initially start with it?
Hmm.
Yeah. And the theory was that the initial cunnilingus was because they wanted to clean competitors' sperm from their vaginas. Like, in fact, you know, if the female was engaging in any other sexual activity with a different bat, then, or, I don't know, some other mouse or something, then she, you know, because they're very similar. So, only they don't have wings. But so they needed to clean the competitor's sperm. But the question was left, why did they do it after? Because it kind of cleans their own sperm from within. And then, you know, kind of lowers the chances of conception. But yeah, but please share what you wanted to say.
Well, you know, you just, this is just a thought off the top of my head. But like, bats drink blood.
Yeah.
And I imagine that bats also menstruate, right? So could that be part of the equation that
why the male bats are
into it or something?
Well, it could be, but regardless, it's a behavior that is relevant for mammals.
Uh-huh.
You know, even though they were specifically as species were kind of more interested in that activity. But the question, the main question that was remained was why the different, you know, times that they engaged in it, before intercourse or after, you know, that was the question that was remained.
Well,
we are yet to decide on that.
I have to talk to some bats and
I know. Yeah, we should question around. Well, this has been such a blast. I mean, we're out of time, even though I had such a great time talking to you.
And back at you.
And I'm very hopeful to have you here again.
I will be
next
here whenever you want. Whenever you ask me, I will be here.
Thank you so much, honey. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Dr. Limor Blockman, and I'll see you here next week. Bye.